The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Chairman of the board, that voice of God that you just heard is Jared Nielsen. If anything goes wrong on the show, it's totally his fault, not mine. He is the chairman of the board. Hope you had a great weekend. Friday night I was going to go to a high school game, and then my daughter, she works at Changing Hands, and she had a book reading, and she was with an author who happened to be an actor, and I said, well, let's go, and it was packed. Went over to the Mesa Amphitheater, absolutely packed, and because I am not the I'm not the best, I got to go back to where I put it. I'm not the best at knowing stuff inside and out. When I'm there, my wife said, Max Greenfield is who Allie is interviewing, doing this book thing. I said, Max Greenfield. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, Max Greenfield, the actor, he's funny. He's got a new children's book. And I said, okay. And I get there and there's like maybe, I don't know, because I didn't watch New Girl. Sorry, I didn't watch New Girl, but I get there and there was not much in the way of men at this event, which is fine. I'm there to watch my daughter and see how she does. And the auditorium is completely packed. And so, you know, you have this little nervous energy and she got out there and she killed it. And Max was funny and his children's book is great. And so where I was going to be out at a high school game, I was like, no, it's more important to be with my kid. If you're watching this, you're like, oh my gosh, he's not committed to winning. No, I'm committed to winning in life. There's times in sports where you're like, I am not going. Because Saturday I went to the ASU game. And yesterday I did watch the Cardinal game. And I tried to sit through the Cowboys and Browns. And I tried to sit through the Rams and the Lions. And Saturday I was really caught up in Texas, Michigan for about a quarter and a half. My other daughter's marrying a guy whose family is all Michigan. I sent him a text, middle of second quarter, go for a walk, dude. This game is over. So it was great all the way around. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, as always and through the years. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. Appreciate the support of all of our partners. Without them, we don't do this. We are self-funded. We've been doing this since 2011. And absolutely love it. We have big news coming this week. Big news, new TV show that is starting with a new partner this week that been excited about. Actually, a second show. So we're going to be up to like, I don't know, six TV shows. But let's start with the Cardinals because, I don't know, there's Marvin Harrison over there saying, hey, man, I'm open. Like this, and Jody's going to be with us. Jody Jackson and Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers, is right around the corner. Jody and I are going to chop it up about the Cardinals and Buffalo, look ahead to the Rams, what's going on with the Diamondbacks, everything with Jody. She's the best, and it's every Monday. John Wilner will be with us. He's the best. National columnist John Wilner, Wilner Hotline, on the college football front because Notre Dame absolutely crapped the bed. How do you take a team and put them in the college football playoff when on their resume it's you lost at home to NIU? How does that work exactly in this new world where you have the 12 best teams? 12 best teams. Look, Notre Dame, NIU took down Notre Dame. NIU has North Carolina State later this month. They win that game, are they one of the 12 best? I'm saying it somewhat facetiously because there is going to be a team that will be from outside the usual suspects. Remember when Liberty was here last year playing the Fiesta Bowl? There's going to be that team. I don't know where that team is right now, but I'll tell you, Michigan is not a team that is in the middle of the college football playoff, in my opinion, today. Today. So we have Wilner coming up, too. Start with the Cardinals, though, the most current thing. And, yeah, they're in the game. First game of the season. This is what happens when August fake football gets in the way and people are trying to figure out each other. When you don't play anybody in preseason and, you know, thankfully, I'm starting to hear some people on the air say, well, this is what happens when you don't have the games in August. And yeah, they're on the payroll from the NFL and they're greasing the skids for eventually we're going to get rid of all the lousy stuff in August because NFL football in September is not great. It's great for fandom. It's great for betting. It's great for fantasy football. The quality of football in September versus the quality of NFL football later in the year, it's not even close. Not even close. And so the Cardinals had Buffalo on the ropes. And Josh Allen, you're going to lose to Josh Allen. He's got to take over and take control. Drop ball late in the game. Kyler missing Marvin Harrison Jr. late in the game. But even beyond that, Marvin Harrison Jr. has got to be fed the ball. Like, I'm watching Cooper Kupp last night, and I get it. Puka was out with the Rams. Puka Nacua was out. But Matthew Stafford just kept feeding him and feeding him and feeding him. He's the fourth overall pick. Feed him the ball. Just not that hard. And, you know, this week at home, do you hear those fans in Cleveland booing the heck out of the Browns? You hear those fans in New York with the Giants booing the heck out of those fans? Doesn't matter if it's first week of the season. Cardinals don't show up on Sunday against the Rams. I want the expectations to be higher than just, you know, it's like with ASU, forks up and go Devils, go 6-5 and go to the Sun Bowl. No, I'm done with that stuff. We should have a higher expectation. So you're 6 for Kyler. You can't miss plays like, you're going to miss a play or two, but drop ball late in the game. But they played well enough to win. The question about the defense actually played well enough to win. So I am not one of those that is sitting here today saying, oh my gosh, the Cardinals are this, the Cardinals are that. They have the next 3 weeks at home. I don't like 3 home games in a row. I really don't, especially in September. If I'm going to have 3 home games, I want to have 3 home games in early December. Okay? I'm going to need to get business taken care of. And so in these 3 games, they go 2-1. Can't go 0-3. Really shouldn't go 1-2. One of those games is against Washington. You go 2-1, you feel pretty good at 2-2 out of the gate. You do. 3-0 would be over the moon. But in just watching them, I didn't like some of the play calling. Just weird. So, you know, you lose by 6 and you come back and you blow a lead. You got a lead in this game. So Rams come to town next week. Rams offense, pretty darn good. And you know, the whole buildup's going to be, which team is going to go 0-2? Dun, dun, dun. So there's going to be that whole buildup. On the college front, I'll get over the Diamondbacks. Jody Jackson, Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by Edie Marshall Jewelers, right around the corner. On the college front, so here's Arizona State, 2-0. Here's U of A, 2-0. I would say that the U of A 2-0 is questionable. They have a litmus test Friday against Kansas State on the road. U of A was 0-10 in converting third downs. U of A has not looked great for a whole game yet. They're 2-0, but New Mexico had them on the ropes. NAU was not a blowout. If you're truly one of the best teams in the country, those games should be impressive walkover wins, in my opinion. So now you have ASU playing Thursday. They play at Texas State. They don't want to hear this, but it's a fact. It's a trap game. Kenny's got to know the pulse of his team. He had the pulse of his team. What I really like about Kenny Dillingham is I get so tired of forks up, go Devils, and all that nonsense. And these people parading around like they're journalists, and all they are cheerleaders, and they get credentials, and they're not ever going to say, things really aren't good. They're not. And I find that to be a low part of our industry, which already doesn't have the greatest of reputation. When things are bad, they're bad. When things are good, they're good. It just isn't that hard. So when Kenny goes on ESPN and just rips his team about, hey, Mississippi State's going to come back here, and that's not a great Mississippi State team. If we're talking about the SEC, yeah, it's got the SEC brand name alongside of it, but it's not Alabama. It's not Georgia. It's not LSU. It's not Ole Miss. And Kenny was right. They came back. Growing period. It's fine. Not demeaning the victory. They take care of business at home. SEC team, 2-0. It looked to me like Mississippi State had this, it is dang hot out here, and we're down early, and let's just roll over. I was up in the Santan Ford Club with Tim Hovick, and Steve Keim was there, the former Cardinal general manager. And we were talking at halftime just about, you know, kind of what he has seen in players. And some of you have your opinions on Steve. It's fine. I like to talk to people that have an NFL pedigree in them and say, what are you seeing? And his impressions of what Kenny's doing were really good. The way that the game finished out, you can't have Cam Scataboo running for that amount of yardage every week. It looks nice, sounds nice. Kind of like Cam Scataboo to be upright by mid-October. Can't take that much punishment. Got to find other people. Football is a violent, violent game. If you've ever been down on the sideline for a college or NFL game, it's just car crashes. There's screaming and squealing and all sorts of stuff. Okay? It's Lions that are doing their thing. College game, a little bit less, but it's still that. High school game, a little less. But you get the idea. You get the general picture here. So Kenny calls out his team on ESPN, which is great. I love honesty. I love it, love it, love it. And those coach interviews, the sidelines usually are just a waste of my time. Coach, so what are you going to tell your team at halftime? Coach, do the fans have you excited? I just wish a coach would once say, no, they don't have me excited at all. Thank you for your dumb question. Let's move on. Kenny was, I loved how he said afterwards, I'm going to go puke over this one. So all that to say, nice win, 2-0, very nice win. Is it a signature victory? Over the SEC it is, hadn't happened before. Is it Kenny Dillingham's calling card was this win over this team? That's not going to be the case this week at Texas State, but this is a trap game. You got to figure out how to get your team motivated. You got to pull out all the stops, all the tricks of how to get your team excited, geeked up, to get on a plane, fly down to Austin, drive up to San Marcos, Texas, play a game on a Thursday night on a short week of rest after your running back carried the ball a ton, and can he keep doing it? At Texas State, you may be like, oh, it's nothing. No, they're actually pretty good. So there's that. The hometown nine, man, there's a lot of panic in the streets if the Diamondbacks are going to make the postseason or not. Jody and I are going to talk about that in a minute. If you had Pavin Smith on your bingo card hitting three home runs on a Sunday, you're the only one. They needed that in the worst way because the first two games in Houston, they were awful. Off today, Texas tomorrow. All right, Jody Jackson, Jody Jackson's Gems by Edie Marshall is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Jody Jackson's Gems, and as you can tell, she's wearing them today. Brought to you by Edie Marshall Jewelers. We do appreciate Edie Marshall. I know you appreciate Edie Marshall. So do I.
I certainly do, yes.
Yeah. Let's just get into the Cardinals. So the world is not falling, in my opinion. The world is not coming to an end, in my opinion. Some positives out of what
happened. Panic yet.
I know. No, it's like, you know, you go around the I-10 curve or the Broadway and there's people with broken ankles jumping off the bandwagon from, you know, one game. And there were some positives I felt like, and I don't want to be all happy talk because obviously there were negatives. So I'm just going to throw it to you. What were on Jody Jackson's Gems mind as you're watching the game unfold and then in hindsight?
Well, a couple things. So, you know, and then rewatching the game, I had more thoughts too. And you have to remember it was a tale of two halves, and often it is in the NFL or, you know, any sport for that matter. It can be, what did we see early? What did we see late? And I will say this, one of my keys to this season was going to be Kyler Murray decision-making late. And I didn't love some of it. I didn't love some of the calls as well, but here's what I would say looking at the whole product.
Yeah.
Everything that we loved about the touchdown to Michael Wilson, you know, early in this game, is everything that we really hope and expect to see from Kyler Murray. I think we all were really happy with that play. And so seeing that pleased me as far as what he was going to be able to do in this offense and targeting a guy like Michael Wilson. And then, but later in the game, of course, and everyone's, of course, talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. being open, waving the hand around. And here's the thing that happened, no matter, you know, Brad, you've covered football for a very long time, as have I, as have a lot of people. It happens. Great quarterbacks do miss receivers. I think the fact that it happened with a chance to win the game made it all that much more magnified. And I do think that it's a little, you know, when I rewatched the game, early in the game, there was a 3rd and 6 to Greg Dortch. And I thought to myself, and watching the play, there were some other things that could have happened on that play. And he went to Greg Dortch. I do think that Kyler Murray did latch on a little bit to Greg Dortch in that game. And whether that's just because they, and they've had a good chemistry, but he's had a good chemistry with Trey McBride as well. I think there was a lot of feeling out going on in this game. Feeling out from Drew Petzing with the calls, feeling out with Kyler going to Marv, which, you know, early on wasn't perfect. Obviously, there was a drop there. There was a back shoulder that didn't, where they were on, not on the same page. I think a lot of the feeling out stuff happened. They'll learn from it. Let's hope. And they will be better. But there was a lot of good in that. You know, the defense wasn't as bad as it's going to hang on the defense. 34 points is not pretty to see. There were some good moments, though, and I think special teams, by the way, special teams was fantastic, except for one bad punt, and Jeff Rogers does an amazing job. So that's, I looked at that and the touchdown, the return touchdown, there were a lot of good things, but it does hurt to me that they weren't able to finish it.
Okay, a lot there. And I would say that when I'm watching the game, it's, this is what happens when you don't play in August. Okay. As much as I hate August football, and I hate it, it's like at the top of the list of things in sports I don't like. It's fake football, but you don't have any reps, and eventually those games will go away and the regular season will be extended. Jody, when I see football in September versus seeing football, I don't know about you, when I see the NFL in November, the product's a whole lot better than it is in September. Because teams are figuring it out. Yeah. And I think that when you look at that game and how it went about business, yeah, I didn't see enough to Trey McBride personally. I didn't see enough to Marvin Harrison Jr. personally. There are a few play calls I didn't like at all. That's part of the deal in sports. But Kyler, you know, he did what Kyler has been able to do through the years. He uses his feet, makes big plays, also had a ball knocked out of his hand. Fumble recovery, the whole deal about his height that people have talked about, and I'm sick of it, happened again, though, on Sunday. And that's not going to change. That's the thing. He's not going to grow. So you just have to deal with that. This is your guy, and clearly he's the guy. The missed throw to Harrison, yeah, but there was a big, huge drop that should have been caught down the sideline. And so there were mistakes that were made that, to me, it was correctable. They had Buffalo on the ropes, on the road, with a darn good quarterback, one of the best in the league in Josh Allen, and the defense did enough. Yeah, people say, well, they gave up 34 points. They stiffened when they needed to, and then he just made plays. That happens in sports. Yeah, you have to tip the cap sometimes. People hate that.
Well, Josh Allen. Yeah, Josh Allen's a bad – look, pass rush is a problem for the Cardinals.
Yes.
It's going to be hard to generate with Zaven Collins, Dennis Gardeck. I mean, they will get it done at times, but it's going to be an uphill battle, and I think we knew that. But Josh Allen's a real bad matchup for just about anybody.
Right.
The guy had the 2 passing touchdowns, 2 rushing touchdowns. He hurdled Buda Baker because he made a good decision there to do that, and he gave Buda props after the game. He said, I know what he can do. He's looking to – he'll hit you hard. He went over the top. There's not a lot of guys that could do that or be willing to do that. Josh Allen's willing to do all of that. So that's you do have to tip your cap to Josh Allen. The guy's a massive competitor. But yeah, the Bills, you and I, when we talked last week, I did think with the 2 new safeties back there that the Cardinals should attack downfield. They didn't do that for whatever reason. I think there are probably multiple reasons. I think that early on, Marvin Harrison Jr. to me looked like a little bit of a decoy. And that's fine, but at what point are we now going to use the decoy?
Fourth overall pick. I can't have decoys. Come on. Well,
and you know what? That's why I think we all talked about all the weapons, everything. It's fine. And that's part of how it works in the NFL is you have to have how good are your other weapons that are going to be able to attract attention. But also, you know, you could still get the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. So I think there's a trust factor with Kyler. It's got to change quickly. Hopefully it will, because attacking downfield has to be part of this offense or it won't be successful.
Okay, Jody Jackson's Gems brought to you by E.D. Marshall Jewelers. We're going to go now to what's coming up. Josh Allen's a handful. Matthew Stafford on Sunday night had Detroit reeling. Even though the Rams ended up losing, he was on fire. And so I look at what the Rams are bringing in and saying, uh-oh, this may not go well either.
Well, Matthew Stafford at 36 years old is still an unbelievable quarterback. He had 317 yards the other day. Cooper Kupp was 14 catches for 110. So that's a dynamic duo. Puka Nacua left the game with a knee injury. We'll see where that lands. Same knee that he actually injured during training camp. And so we're not sure what will happen there. But Matthew Stafford to Cooper Kupp is a massive problem the Cardinals are going to have to address. And the thing is, though, with Kyren Williams, to me, is a great player. And last year, and I kind of, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but last year going into, I was doing Cardinals pre and post radio, and I'm getting ready to go on and do the pregame. And I thought, let's think about Kyren Williams though here and running the ball. And they came out, and I think it was in the second half, and they came out and they ran the ball on the like 9 out of 10 plays. And so the Rams will do that, and they may go to it sooner than they did in that game last year. That was the game that I think the Rams ended up winning 26-9, but they do have a powerful attack, the Rams. And so Stafford, completely different guy, right? He's going to attack you through the air, and it's going to be a real challenge this week.
But there is no more Aaron Donald. No more
Aaron Donald. That's a great thing, isn't it? Let's just be honest.
He's been a wrecking ball to the Cardinals through the years.
Kyler Murray has had nightmares, I'm sure. Whether he would want to admit it or not, I don't know. But a lot of quarterbacks have had nightmares about Aaron Donald. This is a guy that, you know, he's not just there plugging up the middle. He was wreaking havoc. Those that played against him, coached against him, always talked about him as maybe the best of all time at that position, because he's such a unique blend of being so big and strong, but being an athlete as well. And he's gone now. And, I really like Jared Verse, and I really like some of their pieces on, Verse is a rookie out of Florida State, and he'll be off the edge. And they have some pieces there, of course, but Aaron Donald, there's no way you can replace him. So I'm excited to see the Cardinals against the Rams without Aaron Donald there, because it's been a very long time since hasn't been there.
What do you think is realistic, or what needs to happen these next 3 weeks? It's three home games in a row. Okay. And I'm not a big fan of the way that the schedule is laid out. I don't like to have that much up front. I'd rather see three home games in December, but it's the way the schedule is laid out. Does it mean anything to you these next 3 weeks that they've got to go 2-1, 1-2 is unacceptable? Do you have a number, Jody?
I don't want to really attach a number, but you'd like to see them get, first of all, being at home should be just a lot more comfortable. You know, the conditions, I mean, everyone's comfortable in that stadium because it's a dome and the players all love it across the league. But if you're Kyler Murray, and if you're especially, let's just stick with the offense for right now. You know, you want to enliven the fan base with what you have here. Everyone's been excited to see Marvin Harrison Jr. and this offense come out. So I think it makes sense to, I think everyone in the world says three targets for Marvin Harrison Jr. is not enough. No. So if this is coming out party now at home, maybe. Maybe they didn't want to put a lot of pressure on him. I know this all sounds silly. We've talked for 3 months about how the guy is incredibly mature, and dad being a Hall of Famer, he's been made for this since the day he was born. So why would we be saying, oh, maybe they didn't want to attach too much pressure to him in game one? I don't know. But he did drop a ball, so he is human, and maybe he was a little nervous. The guy's allowed to be nervous, but I think now get comfortable, get home. James Conner, who was a factor early in the game, really wasn't as much later. Get all the weapons going. Start to attack downfield when you have the opportunities. And I think if that happens, I mean, these are winnable games. You can compete with the Buffalo Bills. The Rams are tough. You get Washington. No rookies really looked great. In week one, and Jaden Daniels was among that group. He shows a lot of promise, but there's a lot that can happen in the next 3 weeks that will really tell you a lot about the Cardinals, because you're right, Brad, the schedule, it's not great to have those three in a row, but you have to take advantage of it. If you don't, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Just my two cents, feed Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball early and often. Get him going in the first quarter there. feel much better.
Well, I could say to you, what's the worst that can happen? And we all know that he, you know, there could be picks, right?
Sure.
But, you know, at some point you're going to have to trust Marvin Harrison, and you're going to have to, and they'll scheme to get, you know, they'll take chances to, and when he, but when he's open, you have to be able to hit him. And Kyler, look, it happens. Wide open receivers run free and you don't see them. We saw Larry do. I mean, anytime you see the star wide receiver waving the hand, we saw that through the years, whether it was Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer, and Lord knows we saw it during the stretch of some quarterbacks that were not named Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer, but it can't happen. It can't be a frequent occurrence. Okay.
No, it can't be a frequent occurrence. And look, the way that fandom is, okay, over the weekend in Cleveland, they were booing the heck out of him. In New York with the Giants, they're booing the heck out of him. You don't show well at home. You don't get Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball by halftime. I think this fan base is kind of like, I think they're on edge about Kyler, Jody. I think this is I've said this repeatedly. This is a year that Kyler's got to show something, man. It's just that time for him. And so here's your home opener. You had Buffalo on the ropes. Now you have the Rams. It's a divisional game. There's going to be a lot of excitement around it. And if Kyler can't deliver, and if Marvin Harrison Jr. is over there waving again or is just not a factor, I think the fan base is going to let him have it Sunday. I think there's a lot of pent up, let's get after it.
It's year six for Kyler Murray, and he has weapons now. And so it's a matter of doing it. And you're right. I think if he doesn't take a big step forward, there's going to be a lot of question marks. But look, it is, as you opened our conversation with the comment of it's week one, let's not overreact. I think I agree with that. You know what I mean? You shocked me with that, Brad, because, you know, I thought maybe you'd be here panicking on. No, I'm kidding.
I am not one of those that jumps off the bed. I am panicking, though, about the baseball team a little bit. So let's go over there. Jody Jackson's Gems, brought to you by Edie Marshall Jewelers for a few minutes. It's good to chop it up with Jody every Monday. And we appreciate Edie Marshall Jewelers. So the baseball team, I'm getting a lot of the sky is falling. I'm getting a lot of they're not going to be able to hang on. If Steven Smith hits three home runs in a game to rescue them, that's not what I had on my bingo card Sunday in Houston. You're going to be there for the games against Texas, and then it's Milwaukee. Jody, do you think this is going to come down to the final weekend against San Diego?
It probably will. That's the way baseball works, and that's how it goes. You have to keep pace. You have to. It was obviously vital to win the game on Sunday in Houston because, you know, these other teams aren't going away. You've got the Mets, you've got the Braves, you've got the Padres. You're trying to, you know, the Dodgers at this point, does it matter?
No.
Probably not, but you're still going to chase for that. You're still going to just try to win every single game, every single day, and find those matchups that work. And yeah, the Rangers, when we went to Texas, it was pretty disappointing. The Diamondbacks lost both of those games. And guess who was a wrecking ball again? It was Corey Seager. Well,
don't pitch to him.
Corey Seager. He is out of their lineup. You know, the Rangers have had a bad season. You know, you follow up the World Series and you aren't even going to make the playoffs. That's tough to take. But and it appears that Seager now is out and, you know, has an injury, and you have to take advantage of these two games, a little bit of a revenge, not only for the World Series, of course, but for those two games earlier this year. And so we'll hype up those matchups, but at the end of the day, they just have to come out on top, the Diamondbacks. And then you have Milwaukee, you have three at home, and then you're going to have four in Milwaukee. So the Milwaukee Brewers are going to play a huge role. Our old friend, Pat Murphy, you know, with his ties to Arizona State. And, you know, he's going to play, his team's going to play a huge role in what happens here. You do get the Rockies in the middle, but we all know those games can get weird because they're in Colorado. So, you know, this is what it comes down to for Troy Lovello and the D-backs. It's going to be really challenging. You're going to have to embrace every day. To put it, all the little decisions are going to matter, all the big decisions and all the little decisions. And last year they found their way in at 84 wins. You know, they're already at 80 wins now. So you like the win total, but every year's different. And so right now they're going to have to, this is going to be such a tense and interesting stretch till the final game on September 29th.
Okay. So truth serum. Are you worried about them? Truth
I mean,
serum.
a little, of course, there's a little worry because
You're worried? You're Jody Jackson. What do you mean you're worried? We see
I mean,
you
I'm
in
not
the
like, I
ballpark.
wasn't.
Welcome to Diamondback Baseball. I'm worried. That can't happen.
No. I mean, it's not, it's crazy because now you get to under 20 games left and.
Yes.
But yet there's still enough, there's enough time to really make, you know, there's enough time to blow it. There's enough time to secure it. This team, I have a lot more trust in this team than I did last year's team.
Really?
Because, yeah, I do. Even though I know Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, I know have been a little shaky at times. But I just think they've been through the wars now. They've been through it, and they expect to win. Last year, you know, as beautiful as it was, and Brent Strom and I had this conversation, he says, you know, he always goes back to, we don't get in that last day. None of this happens. None of it happens. None of the cool stuff happens. None of the wins in Milwaukee, the sweeping the Dodgers, the Phillies winning games 6 and 7. None of it happens, but it did happen. It all happened. They made it happen. So I have a pretty high trust level in them, but you know, I'd be lying to say, I think everyone, if they're, you know, and it's funny because Mike Hazen will be really, you talk about truth serum. I mean, sometimes he's the most honest of them all, where he's, you know, freaking out about everything. And, you know, can you blame him? I mean, it's hard. It all falls on him, really. He takes the blame no matter what happens, right or wrong, and that he should do that, but he does. And, you know, but I have a pretty high trust level in what these guys can do after seeing what I saw last year.
Okay, there's two players I have to ask you about, and I don't want to put you on the spot because of your position that you're in, okay? But I'm just curious, have they given up on Paul Sewald and Jordan Montgomery getting this thing turned around? It's just too late in the season for those two players to be brought in. Because when I turn a game on, if I'm not there in the first six innings, I know that every night I'm going to see Kevin Ginkle and Joe Mantiply. Every night it feels like
well,
they're going to be on my screen. And so I'm looking at Paul Sewald and Jordan Montgomery, and I'm saying to myself, self, are there two jerseys over there that just aren't going to be in a game when it matters?
Well, look, Montgomery and Sewald are different in my eyes. So Montgomery has become kind of the long man. He's become a little bit of a piggyback at times off of, you know, whether it's planned or not, it's kind of been a piggyback off of Eduardo Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these two lefties that end up combining in the game. Unfortunately, that if that's happening, that means Erod hasn't gone real deep in the game and it hasn't been good. You're right. Montgomery, nothing has been expected with what's happened with him. And I think he's a valuable arm to give you innings regardless of the situation. So yeah, you're not going to see him probably in high leverage, but guess what, Brad, you know, as well as I do, if they need it down the stretch or in the playoffs or whatever, things can get crazy. You need him. You want him to perform well. You feel like in any moment he's capable of it. Paul Sewald, his last appearance, you know, again, I'm looking at every appearance. He gets dinged because Corbin Carroll couldn't get to a ball and couldn't find the ball and a run scored. But I didn't think his outing in Houston on Sunday was bad. So I think that they're still building Paul Sewald to a point where he can come in high leverage situations. Is he there yet? Probably not. But I think that they're still looking for him to be that guy. And Torrey Lovello has said as much. And I think they need him to be.
Yeah, no, Jody, I'm totally agreeing with you on this. I can't see Justin Martinez coming into the ninth inning in San Diego and facing Manny Machado with the game tied at 3, and they're trying to get into the wild card. I don't trust Justin Martinez yet because he does feel to me like I love his stuff. And I know
I'll just tell you, you're going to see that. You'll probably see that.
Yes.
So, and here's the thing, he's got the potential to be he's on a climb right now, okay, and he's going to get there.
But his really climb goes to the sides rather than straight.
Yeah.
Up.
I know.
You know?
Well,
I mean,
it's hard. The middle part, you go from like
he's so good. Like, dang it, he is so good. And then, I'm agreeing with you about Sewald. See, I think when you're saying they're getting him up, I got to believe there's going to be some high leverage situations here in the next couple of weeks where you can't just keep going back to Ryan Thompson and Joe Mantiply and Kevin Ginkle every single time. And that Paul Sewald's down, like, is he going to do anything here. Eighth inning, bases loaded. We need a right-hander. We've already used Thompson. We've got Jamar down there. We don't think we can get four outs out of him. We used him the day before. Seawald, get in here. That's
well,
what.
Well, you bring up. Well, you do bring up a good point about usage, and these guys are pushing. Like Justin is, you know, in an area where he really hasn't been before, so they do have to watch that a little bit. But it's September, and you're going to be pushing those buttons, and you're going to be pushing limits, and you're going to be, you know, without getting guys in harm's way. But if they're telling you the truth about how they're feeling, and you have them loaded for that day, you know, you have them ready to go. And I think you're going to see situations where you see both Paul Sewald and Justin Martinez in those situations. They need those guys. I mean, AJ Puck has been the one guy that has really been nails the whole time. Yeah. And you can see with his stuff how that's possible. But, you know, when he first came over, I mean, he's a guy that hasn't, you know, none of these guys are perfect. They're never, it's never going to be perfect every single time. But the role that they got on last year has you thinking, like, is that coming? Because that would be really nice right about now, where those guys got completely locked in. And they're still capable of that, but we're going to learn a lot about it. These games, it's going to be such a test here in September that we're going to, they need to worry more about that than even, you know, postseason. But you're right, San Diego, that final weekend, it's hard not to think about that. But right now, they got to think about the Rangers and Milwaukee.
She says that they're not perfect all the time, but she is. That is Jody Jackson. Brought to you by Edie Marshall Jewelers, Jody's Gems, every week. Good seeing you. Have a great week.
Thanks, Brad. You too.
John Wilner now with us for a couple of minutes as we break down what happened across the great sport of college football over the weekend. Because John and I sat here a week ago and we said, do you know that Northern Illinois University is going to beat Notre Dame even though they're a 4-touchdown favorite? And John said, absolutely. Because everybody across the country had Northern Illinois University going into the playoff if they beat North Carolina State here in a couple of weeks, or maybe not. I don't know. In all seriousness, John, did you pick your jaw up off the floor on that one?
Pretty darn close. Now, Notre Dame has had trouble in the last few years with, you know, the group of five teams. They keep losing these games early in the season when you don't expect it. And this was another one. Really baffling coming off of the very impressive victory at Texas A&M. A letdown game, obviously, for the Irish. And, man, it was that was something else watching that Northern Illinois with its field goal. Notre Dame had, was a 60-yarder or something like that. Yeah, and the issue for the Irish is with that A&M win, they had a clear path to the playoff.
Right.
Just win the games they're supposed to win. Win right. The games when you're a double-digit favorite and you're going to be in the playoff. And here they go and give it away. They have given their free pass into the playoff away, and now they're really going to have to earn it because that's a bad loss that the committee will hold against them, you know, in early December, and they don't have a very strong schedule to – pick up quality wins to offset that bad loss to Northern Illinois.
So,
hey, go Huskies. Biggest win for them ever.
Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, that's what makes college football so great, right? But let's just play this out. Let's just say Notre Dame runs the table now. You're going to have people out there saying, well, they're not one of the 12 best teams. Look at what happened to them early in the season. And so it goes back to when you lose games. They got to hope like heck that USC is really good.
Yes.
They've got a, because that's the game that I would say of the games left, but you can't even call it that because they lost to Northern freaking Illinois University. So, So you know, to play it out, but from the committee standpoint, how do you put a team that lost NIU in a playoff, John?
It will be tough. It will partly depend on what the competition is. If the competition for that last at-large spot is a three-loss team, and Notre Dame has got one loss, it's easier for the committee to justify. But Notre Dame needs Texas A&M to have a good season in the SEC to make that win look better. They need USC to have a good season in the Big Ten.
Great.
And great season. And they need Florida State to get it turned around. The Seminoles visit South Bend in early November. That needs to be, you know, a Florida State team with a winning record maybe not competing for a playoff bid, but at least ranked. Every game Notre Dame plays needs to be elevated in order to offset that loss. But it will depend on whether they're getting compared to a two-loss SEC third-place team or a three-loss Big Ten fourth place. It's all relative, just like the NCAA tournament. When you get down to the bubble in the NCAA tournament, every team's got a flawed resume, and the committee picks and chooses exactly what the differentiators are. It will be the same thing with football now. The 12 teams with seven at-large teams, you're going to have those last two spots. Everybody's going to be flawed. Where will the committee find its points of differentiation?
The points of differentiation will be ABC, ESPN saying, it's Notre Dame. We're taking them. We don't care.
Could be. Absolutely.
Come on, John. That's like the conspiracy theory in me. I'm the grassy knoll guy on all this. Notre Dame's in no matter what because of the brand.
Brand bias, there's no doubt, plays a role in all of these selection processes, whether it's March Madness or what we're going to see in the playoff this season with the 12 teams. It's not necessarily, ABC on line one in the committee room, but there is certainly a subconscious bias towards the big brands because you know Notre Dame's going to get a giant TV rating in those opening round games. Absolutely, that's going to be a factor.
Okay, but where do you put Michigan now? Because Michigan wasn't impressive against Fresno State. Michigan just got jack-stomped at home by Texas. That game was over. I was texting Michigan fan friends of mine, one's going to marry my daughter, and said, just spend your Saturday going for a walk in the second quarter. They had their tail between their legs. They look terrible, John. I mean, Ohio State fans should be cheering about this year's matchup the way it looks.
Well, you know who else should be cheering? Is USC fans. Because Trojans go to the Big House, I think it's in 2 weeks, for their Big Ten opener. Once upon a time, that looked like a brutal game for SC. Now, boy, Trojans have got a great chance to go in there and win. Mm. So Michigan, to me, now I was never super sold on Michigan, partly because they lost 13 draft picks, partly because Harbaugh's not there, partly because they, unlike Ohio State, they didn't go into the portal to get a quarterback to replace J.J. McCarthy. They went with what they had on the roster, and now I'm not sure they've got the guy. So I wasn't high on Michigan in the first place. I thought there was going to be a significant setback under Sherrone Moore, and it certainly seems like we're headed in that direction. My playoff projections this week, which will be available on the site today, plug. Michigan, I don't have them in the playoff. To me, they are a bubble team at this point, and they could easily fall off the bubble if they lose to SC in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, what you're leaving out there is they lost their most valued asset, and that's Connor Stallions, John. That's what we're talking about here. Come on.
I'm not going to be the one to point out that there is a direct correlation between Connor Stallions' arrival on staff and his work as a spy master. And Michigan's success in the late part of the Jim Harbaugh era. I'm not going to point that out to you and our listeners because I don't think it's relevant. But boy, you can draw a pretty strong correlation between those two things.
I like to have a little bit of fun, a little bit of levity on.
Sure, me too. Absolutely. That's what it's all about. And certainly that is an incredible conspiracy theory topic for everybody, right?
No question about it. John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Wilner Hotline, nationally syndicated. John Wilner knows college football inside and out. He joins us every week. Okay, I like what's going on this week. I've lobbied that Arizona and Arizona State need to do this, and that's move up their rivalry matchup. Oregon State, John, they're playing this week. Washington State playing this week. Not at the end of the year, the famed Apple Cup. What do you make out of these two rivalry games this Saturday?
I actually had to look up, when does Apple season actually start? And I believe it does start in August. So technically the Apple Cup is still being played during Apple season, but it is weird to have those two games on September 14th. Obviously with the conference changes, right? The Huskies and the Ducks had to slot the games into the non-conference portion of their season, which was week 3, September 14th, It is completely weird, but they are big games. Big game for Oregon because of how sloppy the Ducks have looked so far. Huge games for Oregon State and Washington State, which are clinging to relevance nationally and need either victories or at least highly competitive performances on Saturday against their rivals to maintain the relevance they need as they are scrambling to find a conference.
Okay, so I've seen Oregon now twice. I am not impressed at all with their lines. This is not the typical Oregon Duck smash mouth, beat you over the head team. What is going on in Eugene this year? Is this just an anomaly 2 weeks in, or is it, no, they've missed on some people?
I think we got to wait a few more weeks to see if it's a they have missed on some of their transfer portal and recruiting pieces. You know, all the ingredients are there for them to have a first-rate offensive line. There's plenty of talent. They've recruited tremendously from the portal and high schools. It's very confusing, but this stat to me speaks for itself. Oregon's allowed 7 sacks in 2 games against Idaho and Boise State, right? Not exactly Ohio State and Penn State.
Right.
7, that's more than they allowed all of last year. 5. More than they allowed all of the year before. 5. That is not solely because they have no longer have Bo Nix, right? There is something wrong with the offensive line. It's the communication and cohesiveness. Typically, offensive line and secondary are the two units that need the most cohesiveness, take a little bit longer to evolve over the course of the season. But nobody could have predicted Oregon was going to have this much trouble blocking up front and blocking for the run, too. They haven't run the ball very well. It's not just a pass protection issue for Dylan Gabriel. They're not blocking very well for the running game. And so if you're not running the ball, the defensive line can tee off and it makes your problems with pass protection even worse, right? They've got Oregon State just shut out San Diego State, will be a good test. Everything is pointing toward October 12th when Ohio State comes to town. Ducks have got to get this thing sorted out by then for sure. They can afford a loss somewhere along the way with the new playoff, but boy, they are losing, you know, that subjective factor. You know, you play enough close games against second tier teams and you lose your, that any subjective benefit you might get from the committee if you're in a resume showdown with somebody else.
Utah looked very good, but Cam Rising had to leave. They've got a rivalry game with Utah State. This is one of those deals where, yes, Utah State went through a coaching change, a lot of turbulence in the offseason for the Aggies. But what do you make out of Utah so far? Are they the class of the Big 12?
They certainly were for, what was it, almost 6 quarters almost when they had Rising. I mean, they were blowing Baylor out. It was 23-0. Now, that was a non-conference game. But still, it's a conference opponent. Utah looked fantastic. Rising goes down. He gets shoved into the water cooler, which was way close. I mean, far too close to the sideline. I don't know what Baylor was doing with it. That it was a hazard. So he gets slammed into there. It doesn't seem like this is a long-term injury in terms of a broken fingers. But he might not be back this week against Utah State. And they got to be careful.
Yep.
Because Isaac Wilson has not looked good. Stud recruit, brother Zach, came and did not look very good in the opener against Southern Utah when he had some playing time. Did not look good in the second half. And more importantly is you just sense this deflation with Utah, with the players and the crowd when Rising's not there, because everybody remembers last year when he didn't play at all. It was a struggle for them. And now here he goes. You know, the air is completely out of their momentum. Isaac Wilson has not made enough plays, I think, to engender confidence from his teammates. So they could struggle a little bit against Utah State. The bigger issue for them is their entire season is the last 2 Saturdays of September. So the 21st, they go to Oklahoma State for their Big 12 opener. And then the 28th, they host Arizona. That is that those 2 games will shape their entire season. They need to get Rising back. So he's got essentially 2 weeks to get back, be on the field against Oklahoma State and Arizona, because if they lose those two, not only is their chances to win the Big 12 slim, but the path into the CFP, even as an at-large team, very, very narrow.
Okay, let me throw a couple more games at you and I'll get you out of here. John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes every week, going right through the college football schedule in the season. On CW, Ole Miss plays at Wake Forest. Ole Miss has been a program that is right there, it sounds like, every year in the SEC, but they don't get over the hump. What do you make out of what's going on with Lane Kiffin's team this year?
Well, they're loaded. Jackson Dart's a terrific quarterback. The portal king, as Kiffin has dubbed himself, right? He has made very smart decisions. We see some coaches that load up in the portal and it's the wrong guys. It's the wrong mix. It's the wrong talent needs. Kiffin has been very deft with how he has used the portal. They are, I'm not sure they're Georgia and Texas's level, but they're clearly on that second tier in the SEC with Bama, you know, maybe LSU, Oklahoma, Missouri. I mean, that the conference is so deep with good teams. I think Mississippi is a real threat for the playoff as an at-large team. You got it, but if you're that team, you got to go into Wake Forest and you got to hammer them, right? And you can't let it be close into the fourth quarter. You can't let Wake Forest think they got a chance. Wake Forest has been good. There've been years where they've been good under Dave Clawson. I'm not sure this is one of those years. I think Dart should go in there and pick them apart early. And this should not be a competitive game in the fourth quarter if Mississippi is the team that they think they are.
Let's bring this closer to home. So both U of A and ASU are 2-0. Both of them have really interesting games this week. You know, Arizona State on Thursday night, some are calling it a trap game because they're 2-0 and they play on ESPN at Texas State. Nobody knows much about Texas State. What I'm getting out here is I didn't even know there was a Texas State. And then Friday night, you have Arizona and Kansas State, which is a non-conference game because of just scheduling weirdness, but it is a nationally televised game. It's at K-State. It's in Manhattan. And I think the way that U of A looked the other night, they were 0 of 10, John, on third downs. They territory. We were talking about McMillan last week. For a T-Mac, for a Heisman, forget it. It's over. No resume. What do you make out of these two teams? What do you expect this weekend?
Well, that tells you how hard it is for receivers to make legitimate runs for the Heisman, right? They're so dependent upon other factors to have sustained statistical success. I think it's interesting that both Arizona schools are playing on the weeknights, right? What are you going to do on Saturday? You know,
we live in Arizona, John. Come on, we go to the mountains. We go.
There you go. There you go.
Paddleboard. I don't know.
Complete trap game for ASU with a super short week. Texas State is not going to generate a sense of urgency. Kenny Dillingham is going to have to pull out all of his motivational tricks for this one because they've put themselves in great position. If they beat Texas State, they got a real chance. They're 3-0. They only got to win 3 Big 12 games, and they're going bowling. Which right. would be a huge victory for Dillingham. Arizona, it is a complete, it's the same situation, but completely different motivationally, right? Because Kansas State is ranked. That is a team Arizona will have no trouble getting ready for. And it's a very difficult test for them. K-State, one of the best coached teams in the country, mobile quarterback. We saw how a mobile quarterback for New Mexico gave Arizona trouble. You know, Avery Johnson, Kansas State, very mobile. So Kansas State, good defense, tough test for Arizona. Not a non-conference game, but will tell us a ton about the Wildcats and their positioning within the Big 12. If they can go in and win in Manhattan, then you look at Arizona as right up there with Utah and Oklahoma State, mm-hmm. a favorite to win the Big 12. If they go in there and don't perform well, you know, they lose by double digits, can kind of conclude from that Arizona is a second tier team. Maybe they're 8-4, something like that. So we're going to get non-conference game gives us a wide open view of how Arizona is going to factor in the Big 12.
John Wilner, thanks for being with us. As always, killing it.
Thanks a lot, Brett.